All right. Hey, everybody. Roger Pipe from RogerViews.com. I have Kelly Shibari back for a follow-up to our last podcast. Different topic, but thank you, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
So we had such a good time on the last one, and we have such good conversations in between these things that we're going to do one, and I'm going to give a little disclaimer. We're going to talk about some serious stuff. It has to do with the Harvey Weinstein accusations and crimes and his downfall, and you guys know all that stuff already. But I'm going to talk about some stuff and some feelings I have, and I'm sure Kelly has her feelings. But for the sake of this argument, I need to wall off the accusations of rape because, I'm sorry, as accused, he's a scumbag rapist, and any other argument, any other gray area goes away once you cross that line. And I believe at this point, hasn't been proven in court, obviously, so there we are. Disclaimer, as accused, he's a scumbag rapist who doesn't deserve any benefit of the doubt. But we will discuss some philosophies, maybe some topics, maybe some other gray areas as they pertain to mainstream and adult. That's just my personal disclaimer. I don't want anybody to listen later and go, wait a minute, are you defending him? No, I'm not, especially those things, but that's just my little disclaimer.
Agreed.
So what was your first reaction when you heard the initial batch of accusations?
Honestly, you know, I don't want to say I wasn't surprised. Most people know that before I got into porn, I was a production designer in mainstream Hollywood and then a roadie before that. So 8 years in Hollywood and 5 years in rock and roll touring, as a girl, you get subjected to a lot of stuff on a regular basis. And, you know, it's very similar to porn. I keep saying, look, it's an ego business. You know, it's and Hollywood is the same way. When the majority of the business is the commodification of humans in a way that the most beautiful or the most young sometimes takes precedence over the most talented. It's like fashion is the same way. You know, there's when human beings are treated like dolls, there's going to be a certain element of power exchange between somebody who can give you a role in a movie and somebody who wants that role, you know? So, yeah, I think that, you know, and it's important. People go like, oh, yeah, that only happens in Hollywood. You know, that's one of the things I saw a lot on my feed on Facebook was like, you know, these non-adult industry people who were like, oh, well, that's Hollywood for you. That's Los Angeles. There's those liberals in California. But the reality is that these things happen in just about every industry, whether it's Wall Street, whether it's, you know, Main Street USA, you know, there's always going to be some person in power who just wants to take. And there's always going to be young people, men and women, who are willing to do whatever it takes to get ahead. And sometimes that involves sex. And sometimes it's not consensual.
Well, certainly sexual abuse takes place all over. Just in the headlines this week, New York City detectives are being accused of raping a handcuffed prisoner. That happens. But as you said, the offers for get ahead with sex happens. I think maybe it happens more in Hollywood because the stakes are higher.
Right. Well,
right. Manager of a bank might be able to give you a raise.
Right.
But he can't get you an Oscar.
Right. But there's also, you know, 500 women just came forward and put together a dossier of that those kinds of allegations in the art industry. Right. So like artists and painters and sculptors and all that. Like, so that exists there too. There's always been, and I don't think that is anything that's modern. In fact, it's probably really old, you know, where people feel that they can, you know, it's very what, like Svengali, right? It's a very older white men in power can say, oh, well, if you'll do this for me, then you get these riches and fame and fortune and all these things. And sometimes it's just asking you to go run an errand or go, you know, be your personal assistant or be an errand boy. But But when it comes to people that they're sexually attracted to, then it becomes much more than that. And I don't think that that's something that's anything new. Doesn't mean I'm excusing any of it.
Right.
But it's definitely a dynamic that has existed for a very, very, very long time.
As I understand it, you're pro-sex work.
I am.
Okay. I am too. Do you think, by being pro-sex work, in society we've decided that cash is our primary currency. We do work for cash. We've decided that X amount of labor is worth Y amount of cash.
Sure.
That's an acceptable exchange. We use cash then for consent, right? If I go buy a drink at the bar, I'm agreeing to pay this amount of money for the beer. If I take the beer without paying, that's not consent.
Right.
They take my money.
There's implied consent with that, yeah.
Now, we also can agree that we can barter for services.
Yes.
You're a hairdresser. I'm a writer. Okay. You need some flyers written. I need my hair cut.
Right.
I agree to cut your hair twice for one flyer. We make that agreement. And we're pro-sex work. If you're a sex worker, your currency, your talent, your skill is sexual in nature, whatever that is, be it camming, performing, escorting, whatever that is. Now, we've legitimized, or we would like to legitimize, bartering or trading sex for money, just like getting your haircut for money.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. There's this argument that's always gone in the back of my head that says, you know, well, if people would just pay for sex, then a lot of these, like, allegations would go away because you're just paying for it. So it's like this implied consent. You're paying for a service. You know, there's a bevy of sex workers out there that are ready to provide that service for you. The only problem is, one, it's currently illegal. And two, with most of these guys, it's not about the money. You know, it's... With a Harvey Weinstein, it's not about, oh, I could have paid $2,000 for a hooker, you know, to spend the weekend with me or the night with me or whatever the rate is, you know. It's an issue of power, and it's the ego boost that you get from having a young man or woman tell you that they'd do anything if you would help them, and taking advantage of that. That goes away when they're in the paying position of paying for a sex worker. And so as much as I am a huge fan of sex work, and I really think that it should be at least decriminalized, if not legalized, I think for the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, that's not necessarily going to curb their method, you know?
Now in this case, again, taking away sexual assault where consent is not given, that's wrong. Taking away coercion. If you don't do this, I will blackball you.
Right.
Or I have pictures of you, I will release if you don't do this. So taking away those things.
Yeah.
Because we agree that sex is a viable exchange for commodity, if what Harvey Weinstein or someone like him, again, let's say someone like him, let's take him out because he's such a scumbag.
Right.
Someone has power. That's what I have. I have the ability to put you in movies, make you millions of dollars. I have that power. You have what I want.
Right.
Is that a legitimate trade if there's consent? And if the actress says, all right, may not be what I want to do,
but I'm willing to do it.
But if I do this, I will get what I want.
Right.
In the same way that the hairdresser can say, yeah, I'll cut your hair five times if you'll do my lawn once, because I'd rather cut hair five times than do lawn once. And when we're talking about Hollywood, we are talking about potentially life altering money and fame.
But not every producer is a Harvey Weinstein, right? Not every producer is a George Clooney, right? Or a Matt Damon, or, like, you know, people who are in a position to help you make hundreds of millions of dollars. There are so many producers in Hollywood that work on these ultra low budget non-union shows on a regular basis, and they're about as skeezy as they come. So it's not just because somebody can promise you an Oscar, right? A lot of it is just plain, I can give you something that you want. What can you give me for it? And on the taker side, it's like this odd satisfaction of, oh yeah, you know, I could be ugly and bald and all of these things and be a whole horrible, horrible human being, but women will still have sex with me because I can give them something. It's really sad and really pathetic, but you know, like I don't have any sympathy, but I definitely feel really sad for a person that feels that they have to exude power in order for them to get some affection. Like something's got to be really wrong with them. That's the only way they can feel that they can get affection.
Yes. And that was sort of my defense of the casting couches. If you agree to that,
right?
If for every woman that's come out, if there's 10 that are staying silent because it's what I did and I got a part and it's what I wanted,
right?
I think to a certain extent we're still hung up on this idea that somehow if one of these actors she only got the part because she slept with him. So what? She got the part.
Right.
It may not be right. She doesn't have the same talent. Maybe that was kind of unfair.
What's the whole joke about sleeping your way to the middle or sleeping your way to the top?
Right.
Those aren't jokes because they're rare. They're phrases because it happens more often than not, unfortunately. And you know, this country has a lot of nepotism. I mean, if you just look at politics is a good example. You know, it's hiring your friend or hiring your girlfriend or hiring your mom's best friend's daughter, right? It's so much of what happens, unfortunately, has nothing to do with actual talent and more to do with how you're able to play the game.
Yeah.
You know, but I do agree that if a young woman or a young man wants to get ahead and the offer is made to them that, hey, if you'll perform this sexual service and you agree to it and you are not a minor, right? I think, you know, I don't even know how to do the protections on that. Like, do you get them to sign a non-disclosure? Do you have them sign a consent form? You know, do you need to do that very unsexy diligence thing before you can do sexy things? You know, this is why I perpetually think that sex work should be decriminalized. Even if it doesn't prevent people like the Weinsteins of the world, if it prevents 30-40% of the low budget producers or even the big budget producers, if the reason why they're using their power to get sex is because they're worried they'll get arrested, right? And you take that part out of the equation, you're still going to have, you know, 50% of men or women. I don't want to just keep it restricted to men, but if you have a pool of people and half of those people are always going to do it as a power play, right? You're always going to have those people. But if decriminalizing and legalizing prostitution at least gets rid of the other half, at least it's a step in the right direction, right? Because then you're kind of at least dividing the group into people who are actually perverted and sick, right? And are doing things that they really shouldn't be doing. And you're actually separating them from the people who are like, if it was legal, I would totally just get a prostitute. Right. And get those people out of the way. I think that you would end up with a much better understanding of who the really twisted people are.
And not to make light of obviously what's going on, but the accusations as they stand kind of strike a chord in the adult industry, because some of the most popular reality porn sites and DVDs and clip stores involve coercion. They involve blackmail. They involve casting couch. That's a very popular fantasy. And for all the reasons, right, porn still plays to men and male fantasies. Male fantasy is...
The majority of time, yes.
Male fantasy is to be attractive to women.
Yeah.
You can either be attractive enough, you can be charming enough, you can be funny enough, you can have enough money. You are around rock and roll. I've been around professional athletes. I've been in rooms where literally there was a line of women waiting out the door. And
I'll do anything to meet the band,
right?
You know,
so that exists. That kind of fame and power is attractive to a certain kind of woman. Not to every woman. Not everyone's gonna go sleep with Brad Pitt.
There is a culture of groupiedom that exists for a reason. Yeah.
So though all those fantasies play to a male audience, right? The idea of a casting couch or coercion blackmail's a little darker, maybe. But again, having the power that someone has to do what I want them to do certainly is appealing. And it probably appeals to women, too.
Yeah.
But I think maybe women are more used to being able to get men to do what they want by being beautiful, being charming.
So this is an interesting conversation I've had recently with people who are younger than me, is our waves of feminism. So historically, we are currently in our third wave of feminism. First wave were the bra-burning, amazing women in the 70s. And then we had where I came in, like where I was growing up and I went to college, which is right smack in the middle of second wave feminism, which is where they, you know, one of the things that was very anti-first wave was, no, we don't want to be better than men. We don't want to be like men. We don't want to burn our bras and just wear menswear, and do that. We actually want to own our femininity and our sexuality to get ahead, right? That's why you have movies like 9 to 5. That's why you have movies that, you know, like Fatal Attraction. You have these like strong kind of slightly chaotic women, but using like Basic Instinct, right? Sexy women in power getting what they want by using their sexual wiles on men. And at the time, it sounded like a great idea because, you know, why not own yourself? Why not own your sexuality? Why burn a bra, right? Why pull an Annie Hall and dress like a man so you could be like a man? Like, right? So we were the opposite of that. We are human. All humans make mistakes. And we made some critical mistakes with that. And I think third wave feminists are unfortunately dealing with the outcome of that sort of, yeah, we're super sexy, we could use it to get what we want, has now turned into these, because we're now older, right? Like when we were doing that in our 20s, that was us being empowered. But unfortunately, the men that we were doing that with, right, the men in power that we were saying, yeah, you know what, let's go have sex so you can give me that role, or you can give me that raise or that promotion. That is now why we have these older men who still think they can do that, because they still think that women are willing to do that with them. And there's been a lot of like introspective thinking of late of me going, how much of that is the fault of second wave feminists like myself? You know, it's unfortunate, but if somebody like a Weinstein or a Kevin Spacey or thought 20 years ago, right? So 20, I don't know how old Harvey Weinstein is, but I'm going to assume that 20 years ago he was in his 30s or early 40s. And women were throwing themselves at him. And then as he gets older, like it happens with most, unfortunately, you know, like there's a lot of ageism that goes on. Women are no longer throwing themselves at them. They still... You know, that's still a part of their narrative, you know?
So, again, without defending him, you think it's entirely possible? Because for a long time, he was a king and queen maker. Yeah. He's not a low-budget scumbag. He really was. So it's entirely possible that a young actress, because we teach our children to be polite.
Yeah.
We teach people, if you want to get ahead in business, be nice. Don't be mean. Right. Be nice.
But also, even younger than that, go hug your grandma. Go give her a kiss. I don't want to kiss grandma. No, you need to go. It's grandma. You got to give her a kiss. Right? It's that kind of behavior where we're forced to...
give affection and be polite. Physical. So, again, you're a young actress. Yeah. You're in a room with someone who you know can make all your dreams come true. Maybe you initiate it.
Yeah.
And for someone... And not this person defending him, but sure, that happens for 10 years when you're not completely disgusting.
Yep.
At some point, though, you become fat and bloated and maybe get used to it. I mean,
Some people like fat and bloated, so let me put that caveat there. But
sorry, you become less traditionally attractive. Mick Jagger is how old? 70-something?
Yes.
Not as attractive as he once was.
Steven Tyler, all of those, yeah.
So maybe the line outside becomes shorter. Maybe you start to use what you have to still have what you used to have?
Or the line outside is the same, but they've gotten just as old as you. You know, and you're still into younger girls.
And now you have to use other means.
Right. Whether it's money or threats. Whether it's, threats or money or promises of positions, right? It becomes gross. But unfortunately, we go back to Ron Jeremy, right? Ron and all these people who used to be, just these amazing people that when you thought about who's the sexiest star of the day, 30, 40 years later, they're no longer that,
right.
But they lived a certain part of their life where they were the sexiest man on People Magazine or, the most powerful man in Forbes or whatever. Trump falls into that. There was a time in the 80s where a lot of women thought he was extremely attractive and were willing to kiss his ass for like the Miss America pageant. Now that he's, late 70s, he's an old guy. And he doesn't get the same girls that he used to. And that's probably rubbing in the wrong way, and I think that.
That's an interesting thing. And honestly, I don't think I would blame an actor or an actress. We keep saying actress, but look, a young actor, traditionally we think of men as more sexual predators. So if a female director is at all attractive, you don't twist a man's arm very hard to get that to happen. But let's say he didn't want to.
Right.
If he's willing to do that in order to get ahead, I don't have a problem with it. The problem comes when it becomes forced or when there's such an imbalance of power that it becomes something.
Well, when there's like a threat involved.
Right.
Right. It's like, if you don't do this, then you don't get this, or you don't get to leave the room or
right.
Any of those things. I think that, we see that a lot in the porn industry, because that's also just been the culture for the longest time, is, because our industry is about sex, becomes this like throwaway thing, because so many of us do it as part of a performance. We're not actually like intimately connecting with our scene partner. We're not running off into the sunset and getting married, right? There's no, we know that we're there to do a job and to do it to the best of our ability, which is to depict sexual situations. Sometimes there's a connection. Most of the time it's a fabricated connection. In the majority of instances, it's a really good friendship that then makes the fabricated intimacy even better, easier to do. But at the base level, the sex is just an act, right? And so that when it just becomes an act and that becomes your bargaining chip, right? Of, are you a good performer? Are you an accomplished performer? Are you limber? Can you do certain positions? Can you do certain sex acts like anal, right? When sex becomes the calling card, it really makes things really complicated when it's not on set. And when you have things like drugs and alcohol and parties and conventions and things like that going on, and people are just naturally hooking up with each other, it almost makes the concept of bartering for sex for other things kind of commonplace in our industry. And it's just really blatant in porn, but I don't think that it doesn't happen anywhere else. It happens everywhere else, because that's just the culture of sex-based relations and business.
Well, certainly porn has monetized and transactionalized sex.
Yeah.
In a very literal way.
Yeah.
You do this for this amount of money. People have sex for reasons.
Yes.
Sometimes pleasure, sometimes to please others, sometimes to get someone to take out the trash. trash.
Yes.
Sometimes because they bought you a diamond ring.
Right.
So, all perfectly legitimate as long as everybody's on the same page.
Yeah. One of the things that I went through when I was going through my like the down period during the strike when I was a production designer is I was also single. So I was dating guys and most guys just wanted to go straight to sex. And after like the third or fourth date, I seriously sat down and said, why am I not charging for this? Right. And then I decided to start charging for it. So it's interesting when you can commodify sex, because then it opens up things like, well, if you do this, then I'll give you that. You know, it's not always money, because the money part is illegal right now. Right. So,
well, and it immediately became kind of a Twitter thing within the industry. And we talked about this a little before. I think it is both more and less prevalent in the adult industry. More prevalent because Harvey Weinstein has no reason to say to an actress, go to bed with me, I'll give you a
right.
part. Having sex has nothing to do with whether or not Gwyneth Paltrow can act. If she said no, she's still a great actress. If she said yes, she's still a great actress.
Right, because she's not a sex actress.
Right. In the industry, you are a sex actress. If you are new to this industry, really, you can suck dick that well. Well, we're going to find out because I need to know. And it is if Harvey were directing his own movie, it wouldn't involve sex. If I'm a director and I have my own POV line, guess what? Here's the money. You're going to do this.
So, but one of the first films that Harvey produced was Sex, Lies, and Videotapes. So,
good point. So that's why it's more prevalent. I think it's less prevalent because just scale. The most queen maker in the adult industry can only make you such a star.
Right.
Right? You are not going to be even Jenna Jameson.
Right.
You're not going to be that.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. So the most someone can offer you is some money, maybe some work.
Right.
Someone in Hollywood or in the music industry, if someone can give you a recording contract.
That's a big deal.
You're talking about life-altering money and fame.
Yeah.
So I think it's less prevalent in the adult industry because it's kind of like, yeah, I could do that. Or I could go to my agent, I could work four times next week and be just fine.
But I think that works for performers who have agents. You know, there are a lot of performers who don't have agents, whether they're not based in Los Angeles or they're a niche performer. You know, I have my own stories. You know, I went to go visit a now defunct studio owner's office at the encouragement of another plus size model because he was going to start a plus size line. And so I went to go see him, and I really only meant to go for it to be a meeting, but it quickly turned into, well, you know, I want to see what you can do. And my answer should have been, well, here are some DVDs. But I felt I was, you know, single at the time, and I felt compelled to make a good impression. And wouldn't you know it, that BBW line never happened, you know? And for a long time, there was a lot of resentment about people like that in the industry that I ran into. You know, even the first couple of years after I transitioned into doing more PR work, you know, I was doing seminars and workshops at like AVN and XBiz, talking about how to use social media. After each one of those, I'd get like a short little stack of business cards, and people would follow up and go, okay, well, let's have a meeting. And I would do all the research, you know, for the company. I would come prepared. I'd bring all the stuff. And I would know within 5 minutes that what they really wanted was a date. And that's tough. And that's tough when that's your first couple of years of trying something that isn't sex-based in a sex industry, right? Luckily, you know, at some point, some people took their chance on me. And I was able to prove myself as a competent person. And so now that's why I'm where I am now. But there were a few years in the beginning where people just assumed, oh, she's just a porn chick. You know, oh, she's not working as much, so she must be branching out into something else. And that's hard to go through because you assume that the industry is tight-knit and it's a small industry and everybody knows each other. And I know that there's a lot of drama and there's, you know, all these little clicks and things that happen. But what's most disappointing is when people in positions of power know better and they do things anyway, because they feel that that's the industry. You know?
I think there was a lot of dismissive. There were some stories that came out. We touched on Ron Jeremy. We'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. But it's always disappointing for me when I see on, I know half of Twitter is just trolling, but this idea that, so what, she's a porn girl. Well, you know what? If sex work is your commodity and trade, you're allowed to set what value it has for you. If you want to trade it for this, you can trade it for that. You should not have it devalued or taken by any stretch of the imagination. And I guess that's part of what bothers me. Now, you said that the defunct company, this happened, and there was no BBW line. Would you feel differently if a BBW line came out of it?
I wouldn't have minded.
Okay. I
wouldn't have minded because I consented to doing that.
Then that would have been a fair trade.
Yes,
okay, absolutely. And I think that's something that we really should talk about, because to a certain extent, the casting couch, when it is consensual, is a trade.
Yes.
And it may even be a gamble. Yeah. Maybe this guy can't give me everything that I want. But maybe. And we say guy, but I mean, that's really what it is. And in no way do I want to excuse the behavior that's been described. It's deplorable. It's disgusting.
Agreed.
We had some conversations off camera about some people in the industry that have been involved in things where I was around that I was uncomfortable with. Yeah. I'm not comfortable, for example, someone trying to win favor with the press by throwing a girl. Now, one of my first experiences at a convention, another performer introduced me to a performer. It was Johnny Black, a long time ago. This is Roger. He's a really important reviewer. Mm-hmm. She dropped on her knees and grabbed my crotch. In a public place. It wasn't going to go any further than that, but the implication was fantastic. Let me win you over.
Yeah.
Even that joke, going back in context, and you think, wow, that's it. It's there.
Yeah. So here's my take on that, like things with conventions in general, and it's not just porn conventions. It's also like sex toy and lingerie conventions as well. I am not a fan, and this is why my having sex with a studio owner and not having something happen, like as much as I'm disappointed, it was still my choice. You know, I got in the car, I drove to the studio. Nobody forced me to do anything that I didn't want to do. Where I take issue is when a company owner or a salesperson or another performer, right, offers somebody up on a silver platter and says, here, take this person, have them do things to you. If you'll place a large order, if you'll give us a good review, if you'll spend more money with us, right? And that was the culture of this industry for the longest time. You know, it was, hey, if you place a large order with us, then maybe the girl that's at the booth will actually go up to your room with you. And most of the time that was actually like an established porn girl. I mean, and that's why you have stories like Jessica Drake, you know, last year with the Trump campaign coming forward and saying, yeah, you know, we were doing an event at one of his golf courses and myself and a couple other girls were offered up by the studio to Donald Trump and went up to his penthouse and nothing happened. But just the whole process of a company sending up girls to somebody else as a gift, that I kind of have an issue with. You know, now, like in the case of the girl who dropped to her knees, to me, the more appropriate version of that would be like, okay, well, I know that you're Raj, so nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And then like down the line, go, hey, Raj, I'm kind of interested in like, you know, over, is that cool? It seems less.
It was cartoonish.
It's less pimpy, right?
Right. It was cartoonish and funny. Yeah. But again, it's in context. And, you know, I've gone back over some of my old transcripts and reviews, and there have been things. And it is a commodity thing. And look, I'm a porn reviewer. Nobody really is going to suck my dick for a good review because it's not worth that. It's not. I wish it was. When my site was as influential as it was at its peak,
right,
it wasn't worth that.
But there are a handful of reviewers, mostly past, right? I think who felt that that was a thing that they could have. You know, there's a reason why there are certain reviewers that no longer work in this industry, because they were creepy.
And maybe I've always been very forward. Yeah. My vote is not for sale, no matter what.
Right.
And my reviews aren't for sale either.
Right.
Usually I talk to someone after they've already read my work. So a contract star currently said, you did it backwards. You gave me the good reviews.
Right,
now exactly. I got no incentive to, you know, you got to wait. You got to bait me a little bit. And I'm just not.
Look, porn is an interesting industry because ethics is so non-existent. You know, I don't want to say non-existent for everybody, but for a large percentage of people in the industry, ethics doesn't exist. You know, that's why you have, you know, people who are willing to have sex to get ahead. You have publicists that are willing to do shock PR. You have, you know, marketers offering up porn girls or booth girls as an incentive for a large order. You know, these things happen because...
The case you just said, marketers offering up girls, is that okay with you if the girls are compensated?
If the girls are compensated...
And they agree to it.
And they agree to it before that conversation happens.
Right.
Unfortunately, what seems to happen a lot of the time is that a girl would be there doing her booth girl thing, and a guy and a vendor will be having a conversation, and then that conversation will include conversations about the girl...
Without her knowledge.
Without her
okay, then that's wrong.
Right.
And again, I don't think it's any secret. I am fairly relaxed when it comes to sexual morals. If someone wants to trade, look, if a couple, for example, has their own line and they want to sell it, and that means she's going to have sex with the buyer, I think there's some gray area ethics there.
My first year at AVN, mm-hmm. right, I blew 5 security guards to get a friend of mine into a party. Right?
Okay.
It was my choice. Kind of slutty. I've never done it since.
It's kind of hot, by the
way. Right?
It's kind of hot.
But nobody made me do it. Right? That's okay. However, if a handler or an agent or my friend that I was trying to get into a party talked to the security guards and said, hey, Kelly will blow you if you know, let me in. That's different.
Right, sure.
And I think that that's where the line is.
In that case, if anybody broke ethics, it was a security guard.
Yes. Well, it was probably...
Oh, the group
probably would have gotten them fired.
Right. They're the ones that... Right. All you did was make an offer. You offered, they broke their code of ethics.
Right.
Yeah. So, because of the Harvey Weinstein thing, the adult industry has popped up. There have been a few vague accusations. Oh, you know, before we get to that, we're talking about trading. And I had this discussion with someone else. This is not a personal story, I promise you, even though I'm a publicist, okay? there was for a while a story about a publicist who was working for free because his client was blowing him once a month.
Wow, okay.
And I got into this discussion with other publicists, other people. That's so unethical. That's unethical. It's unethical.
That's a really expensive blowjob.
That's what I but my thought on ethics was, okay, this publicist agreed that his services are worth $500. Yeah. The performer who does private blowjobs
charges
about $500.
So it's an even trade.
They both agreed it's an even trade. Mm-hmm. Why is it unethical to do this, but it would not be unethical, for example, for her to say, thank you for the PR, here's your check. Great. May I please schedule an appointment for a blowjob? Here's $500 back.
Right. That would.
That's ethical, but the trade somehow makes it. And again, this isn't an objective journalist who's getting services to write nice pieces. This is someone who's paid to write nice pieces already.
Right.
They're not going to write anything nicer just because of this extra service.
So full disclosure, I have no idea who this is. I don't really care.
Good.
But. If it's two consenting adults and they want to do it as a business transaction, then by all means, do that. That's between you and your client. I think a lot of times the drama that comes from that is from the girls or the other clients who have paid, who are more like, really, that's all I had to do. You know, all I had to do was offer a sexual favor and he would have done the stuff for me for free too, right? You know, the genesis of a lot of drama is usually not what they say it is. And yeah, I mean, I think if an adult performer wants to offer her private sexual services to somebody who charges roughly about the same amount of money for the work that they do, then I say go for it.
I found that to be an interesting ethical dilemma, because if it was done beforehand, it was considered by people I talked to unethical. Afterwards, it would have been fine. And to me, what's the difference? The money's changing hands anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So
there's just no paper trail.
Right. And probably better for them both tax-wise. Who
yeah,
knows?
Exactly.
There might be the lack of ethics. If it was not reported on their taxes, I suppose that's unethical.
Now, here's the potential problems that comes with doing things that are kind of generally considered unethical, right? Is, say, for instance, if you are a guy who is receiving a blowjob once a month and you're doing PR in exchange for that, at a certain point, if you're no longer interested, then what happens, right? That's, it's less of an ethical dilemma and more of a planning ahead, cover your ass kind of thing that you kind of have to think ahead of time before you enter an agreement like that. So you almost need to be like, okay, I can only do this for 3 months. I can only do this for 6 months. And then you need to start paying, you know. I think as long as that the end game conversation is happening, then mm-hmm. I think that's totally fine.
Okay. So now back to where this led. This led to some revelations, not new ones, about Ron Jeremy specifically.
Sure.
There's a particular cam performer, you guys can look her up, who has accused and went to the police with an allegation of rape. And
this is recent.
This was, I believe, last year. There are reports going back to the 80s with Ginger Lynn. She's on record many times that Ron raped her on offset when they were all together in Hawaii. Number of women, performers and non-performers, it's come out.
About inappropriate behavior.
And again, inappropriate behavior.
Right. Not just rape,
right.
But rape and
right.
Inappropriate behavior.
Inappropriate behavior in one pile and sexual assault in the other. With everyone agreeing sexual assault is wrong, that gets
yes.
taken off the table. If Ron or anyone is guilty of sexual assault, what does the industry do to protect itself? Now, what Exotic has done is they've just said he's no longer part of any of our events because
right.
of these behavior, because repeated reports of this kind of behavior. And not as far as with this, but even unwanted touching, just because you're a performer at a show does not mean you want to be touched by Ron or by anyone else.
Right.
The problem comes in knowing where that line is, because unlike any other convention, a porn convention is a gropey place.
Yes, it is. Deliberately.
Sometimes by design. I've been to 24 years of those. I've watched lines.
Yeah.
One of my first shows I went to,
we even have lines anymore?
I don't know. But there used to be long lines. And who are the – one of them was – I think one of them was Fallon. It was one of the first quarters. And there was another girl. And I used to come to these shows and I had nothing to do but stand in line and wander. So I went to the floor. I watched them schedule makeout sessions to bring people in. That's what they did to get it. Other girls were happy to have you hold their boobs or their butt or flash or do things to get attention and longer lines.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're consenting to do that. I've also stood in line and watched guys grope women and get pushed away and think, what a scumbag.
Sure.
The problem is if you've gone to five or six lines where you're grabbing boobs and everybody's fine, when you get to that sixth, that performer's really put in an uncomfortable position
right.
because now, oh, she's a bitch. No,
yeah.
She just doesn't feel like she needs to let you feel her up.
Exactly.
So, and Ron is
well,
part of that culture.
It's the assumption that all porn girls are the same.
Right. Right. And look, porn performers sell, and I've always said this in reviews, when I call someone a slut, first of all, I have nothing against, you can have sex with as many people as you want, I don't care, good for you. But in porn, if you come off as a slut, you've done your job.
That's a good thing.
You convince
yeah.
the audience that you would have sex with anyone, including them. That's
yeah.
your job.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing. And they're playing that part at a convention, but it's not always as comfortable
right.
for a performer. And
a lot of performers, you know, myself included, we have a serious case of social anxiety. Most of us are only really happy in controlled environments. You know, and that is definitely true for me, which is why I've never really been a webcam model. I'm definitely not a phone sex operator. I've always been very comfortable just in a controlled set environment with a director and, you know, a photographer and, you know, where we all know what's going on. But, you know, conventions are completely uncontrolled environments unless you have a bodyguard. You know, there's a reason why Sarah J has a bodyguard with her all the time. Especially at the convention booth, you know, and, you know, and a lot of that is because you need someone else to say, okay, buddy, time to go, you know, because our job is to be friendly. Our job is not to be a bitch. And, I understand it from the fans' point of view because they're very happy. They're very excited. This is one time they spend all this money. They come to Vegas or to any, you know, they go to Jersey for Exotica or they come to Vegas for AVN and they have an agenda. You know, they've spent like $1,000 between airfare and a pass and a hotel room and food and everything else. And a girl doesn't want to pose with them for a photo. That's a huge, you know, that pisses you off. And so I understand that. But, you know, we all try, especially now with like social media, like all of us are constantly trying to tell our fans, please be respectful. Please be nice. You know, if you'll be nice, then we'll talk with you. If you're rude, then you're going to have to get kicked to the curb. And so I think that like, I'm one of the luckier ones because my fan base is extremely friendly and extremely respectful, but that's also me for 10 years yelling at them if they're not, you know, and every single year you have a new crop of like 18, 19, 20 year olds who don't know how to say no, right? Because they haven't been taught how to say no when saying no might cost them work or money or fan base or another membership or, you know, a sign up or another DVD purchase or a signed sex toy or whatever. It becomes this really gray area of like, how far can I tolerate creepy behavior before I say no? And how much am I willing to consent to?
Do you think, and again, we're both pro sex work. So sex work is like work. In that way, isn't it like work? The boss says work overtime. I don't really want to work
overtime. Well,
to some extent, work weekends. Do extra if you want to get ahead. Otherwise, you don't get ahead.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to compare office work to sex, but in some ways I am because we're trying to just say it's all work. Mm-hmm. It's very similar. And again, before I was Roger the Critic,
right.
I went to probably 6 or 7 shows as a fan. Mm-hmm. Don't want to sound like I'm virtue signaling. I'm very respectful. I'll tell them the story I told you about my first encounter.
Sure.
Yes, I had some pictures. They're someday I'll post them all, pictures of me holding boobs. I promise you, every time I was holding boobs, it was okay or initiated by a performer. I appreciated that. But other things go a long way. When I met Christy Canyon for the first time, I was a huge fan. She'd retired and she'd come back.
Right.
She didn't let anybody touch her boobs. She didn't let anybody pose with her, really, except leaning across the table. What she did instead was talk to you for a long time, made a long line. But she talked to you and she made a connection in a way that was really special. For a lot of guys, they'd rather hold the boobs. I get
right.
that.
Right. For some guys.
But for other performers, there were other ways to do it. And we'll tie this back to Ron. We're almost being too positive now. But my first encounter with any porn star, my first show here in Vegas, first girl I ever posed with was Trinity Loren, who of course had huge, natural, wonderful boobs. And I was scared to death. I was shaking. And I was a mess, and I stood barely next to her and put my hand on her hip very tentatively. And she said, "What the fuck are you doing?" And she
right.
grabbed my hand and put it on her boob and said, "Squeeze." And I did not go to the next performer, though, and do the same thing. I didn't expect that. But looking back now, I was sexually assaulted, wasn't I? There was unasked for.
putting your hand
no
on
one
her boob.
No one consented. I did not consent to put my hand on her boob. I didn't mind at all.
Right.
But there was another instance with Terry Weigel. brand new. Some dude dropped his pants in front of her. She signed his ass, mm-hmm. or the back of his underwear. I got up there and thought I was cute. I said, if I stand this way, will you sign my underwear? She said, yes. Yeah. She pulled down my pants, signed the underwear, and grabbed my dick. I didn't consent. Doesn't say you could grab me there. Right. You're signing my...
There's definitely an implied consent from the fan in terms of performers, right? That if you are paying money to get a pass to go to an adult convention, girls can touch you, mm-hmm. right? Because that's what you would want them to do right. anyway. But the consent doesn't go both ways, right?
Right.
Because I didn't buy a ticket for you to come to my booth, right? You bought a ticket to come to my booth. And so the implication is that you are interested in some sort of sexual fantasy with me, as, you know, if you're attending my booth, which then comes with the implication that if I want to kiss you on the cheek or grab your crotch or hug you or jump up on you and wrap my legs around you, then that's okay, right? Because who would spend that kind of money to go to a convention and not get touched by a porn star right. of their choice, right? However, the consent doesn't go the other way because the girl's there for work.
Right. Yeah. And she's going to do whatever she wants to do to make the fan happy.
Right.
And or increase the line, which,
right.
which
within her comfort level,
right? Yeah. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
Now, again, with Ron Jeremy, a lot of what he's being accused of is inappropriate touching of fans.
Yes, which I have seen on numerous occasions. Here's the thing about Ron, and again, I really do not want this to sound like I am excusing his behavior because I'm not. It's something that's bothered me for years. And I would see it for years. And I couldn't tell you why I didn't speak up. I really can't. I don't. But I think a lot of it is that what's implied, right? It's implied that people in the porn industry are expected to do certain sex type things. We're expected to be flirty. We're expected to be promiscuous. We're expected to be okay with people groping us and us groping them. And... you know, when you're somebody like Ron Jeremy, this is all he's ever done. I mean, yes, he's done cameos in mainstream Hollywood movies and a reality show and all of that. He has a lovely bottle of rum and all of that.
But only because he already was Ron Jeremy.
Exactly. And he was Ron Jeremy in this industry's golden age. And he is probably the oldest living porn star. In an industry that is still very, very young. This is not an industry that's been going on hundreds of years. This is an industry that's only been around for 50 years. I don't think it's even 50 years yet, right?
73 to now, not 50.
Not 50, 40.
Yeah.
So it's a really young industry, and he was one of the first people, you know, and he's no longer like the dashing leading man, but he still has a huge cult following that comes with the fact that he's a former porn star and still is a porn star. And to a certain extent, people expect him to behave a certain way because he's Ron Jeremy, right? And like on the reality show, you never saw him groping people, right? He was actually extremely respectful on that show. And so I don't know if the groping thing is an inherent perviness when it comes to Ron, or if it's just that society just expects him to do it. Because I've seen him grope women at conventions, right, or in a strip club. Because he'll get like a little bevy of like middle-aged women who are like, oh, Ron Jeremy, and they'll like sit around him, and next thing you know, he's got one hand up one skirt, another hand on somebody else's boob, and he's kissing somebody else. And there's a certain level of consent, I would assume, that the middle-aged women are offering to Ron by being there, right, instead of leaving. They didn't come there with him. They came to the event separately from Ron, and they sought him out, right? And I've seen Ron's face. Like, there's no real, like, pure joy in the groping that he does. And so it makes me wonder if he's just doing it kind of out of like a robotic, like, yeah, this is what people expect me to do, so this is what I'm going to do. Now, again, I'm going to reiterate, I'm not excusing his behavior. I think that it's still creepy and gross and very inappropriate, especially in public. But there's a certain sadness in that that I see when in his interactions with his fans that I think he's just, I wouldn't be surprised if he was just doing it out of rote because it was just expected.
He's repeating his catchphrase?
Yeah, it's like he's just kind of going through the motions because people just expect that because he's Ron Jeremy. And there's something really kind of sad about that. It's like every comedian, like you go and see, I don't know, Dana Carvey or Jim Carrey or anybody, and then you see them on the street and you expect them to be just as funny as when you saw them on stage, and you want them to do your funniest bit. And so you go up to them and you say your bit and you expect them to respond with a punchline when all they're doing is having lunch. And I think that with some comedians, they do the same things. They just go through a phase where they're just like, fine, I get it. I'll do whatever you need me to just so you'll go away. And that's kind of the sad, dark side of fame, right? That I'm glad I don't have.
Now, but then clearly it's different when he's interacting with other performers.
Yes.
And for Ron right now, when he's at shows, he's performing with young women.
Yes.
Often he's appearing, not performing, sorry, appearing with young women who are cam performers, not even porn stars. In the 80s, Ron was one of the five leading men in porn. Everybody knew him. He knew everybody. Now, you're not even talking about a generation of women who may have thought he was hot because it's been so long since he was actually sexy. So now you're a peer at a convention and you're being groped by this person.
Older guy.
And you don't get... I don't want to call it a joke. You don't get the line. You don't get the bit that's happening.
Right.
Because
right.
It means nothing
so,
to you.
So when I first met Ron was my first XRCO. So that must have been 2000. I didn't go to the first one when I first got into business. So it must have been 2008. And Ron came right up to me, pulled my boob right out of my shirt, and started sucking on in front of everybody and all the cameras. Now, XRCO is an industry-only event. All the camera people were media people. And I believed that what I got was like the kissing on the cheek by the godfather of porn. So for me, I didn't feel that that was creepy at all. If that had been at an Exotica, if that had been at an AVN, if that had been at like, you know, strip club down the street, I would have been upset, you know, and because he didn't ask. All I said was, hi, I'm Kelly Shafari. I'm new in the business. Next thing you know, my boob's out in his mouth. And, but again, I don't know if he's just so used to people coming up to him and saying hi and then expecting him to do that. Because I'm not really sure if he gets enjoyment out of it.
Do you think, though, given some of the allegations, that's all part of the pattern, too. He sees how far he can go. You probably aren't going to get in the back of a limo with him and be okay with him doing that in private.
Right. I've been in the back of a limo with Ron, and we just end up talking business. Because this is the thing that I have also learned about Ron, is that if you can actually catch him when he's not in Ron Jeremy porn star mode, he's actually really intelligent. And you can actually, you know, because he has a master's in, like, childhood education.
Which is what people saw on the reality show.
Right. Is you get to see the part of him that's actually very cerebral. And that's why I think that so much of the other stuff that he does, he just kind of like closes his eyes and he just does it by rote because that's what's expected of him. And if he didn't, people would go, oh, what's wrong with Ron Jeremy? And I'm not excusing any of his behavior, but I think there's a sadness.
And again, anybody who didn't pay attention, we're separating out some of these allegations versus, for example, the camp performer has a very compelling story.
Yes.
She also has a video that shows him at conventions being quote-unquote inappropriate. Well, the woman who grabbed my hand and put her hand on my boob was behaving inappropriately. In but context, again, it was fine.
But again, she was probably going, okay, well, this is what guys yep. want when they come to a convention. I might as well own the situation and do it myself instead of waiting for him to grope my hand.
And beyond initial embarrassment, no complaints, by the way. Rest in peace. She's departed now. But
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're a porn girl at a convention, you kind of know that that's what guys are always going to want, then maybe it's actually empowering to take that guy's hand and stick it on your boob. And, you know, it just makes the whole sex dynamic so complicated because you know, for our industry is transactional, but for the rest of the world, it's not.
All of this behavior is inappropriate.
Yes.
Anywhere else.
Yes.
If we go downstairs, we go out on the street, it's inappropriate.
Yes.
It's not okay. And I've, as a journalist, I've been around porn stars who are gropey and grabby, and we go out to dinner, and they couldn't be more distant because now we're off. Now we're going to talk as people.
Yes.
When we're on. The Digital Playground girls were great at that. In the booth, and then away from the booth, it was, let's talk about football.
Yeah.
And so that's inappropriate.
Yeah. I mean, I went through that too, where, you know, I had to kind of transition my narrative with interviews because for the first 4 or 5 years, you know, you do your interviews just like any other porn girl does, which is, oh my God, these are my favorite colors. This is my favorite sex position. Yes, I love cock. Like that's the narrative mm-hmm. of every single porn girl that gets into the business is I love sex.
We all love doggy, by the way. All of you.
Everybody loves
doggy.
What's
your favorite position?
Everybody loves doggy. Everybody loves penises. The bigger, the better. You know, yes, I love swallowing. Yes, I like it all over my face. Yes, all these things, right? Because you're trying to perpetuate the fantasy. Then at a certain point, not everybody goes through this, but enough of us, when we're older, we go through this. We're like, oh, God, that's so contrived. It's so not real. And so, you know, I've been fortunate where my fans have kind of followed me through the past decade, and the majority of them have heard my more recent interviews in the past 3 or 4 years, which is me saying, no, I don't have an orgasm every time I'm on set. No, I don't work with every single person that I like working with. The majority, yes, but sometimes no. My job is not to have an orgasm on camera. My job is to make sure that the person watching it has an orgasm at home. And changing that narrative has actually changed how my fans interact with me because they see me more as an actress rather than a slutty hoe, right? Which is okay, but I definitely, ever since I started changing my interview narrative, the requests for, hey, when are you going to come over and suck my penis? You know, that's gone. That doesn't even happen anymore. And it's I'm grateful for that, you know?
All right, well, taking it back a little bit, because we've discussed a little about the one side of the Ron Jeremy stuff. Now, the other side's very serious, obviously, and not that this shouldn't matter, but maybe it does to somebody. Some of these allegations are coming from some of the most respected women in the history of our industry. Absolutely as credible as Gwyneth Paltrow Naomi Judd.
Ginger Lynn's accusations of Ron Jeremy should be taken seriously, and they should have been taken seriously when she first mentioned it. You know? It's incredibly horrible that she's had to deal with this entire time and not seeing any justice.
So given those allegations, and again, everyone's innocent until proven guilty. The case involving the webcam girl, the police did not find enough evidence to investigate, so there was no criminal case. What do you think the industry, and specifically award shows and fan conventions, what responsibility is there for the industry to maybe not shut someone out, but limit their access?
It's complicated, right? Especially when it comes to somebody like Ron, because he's such an industry mainstay. I mean, he technically is the industry. He's the only industry person that's allowed to do mainstream things on a regular basis and then kind of bop back into porn. Tracy Lords abandoned porn because of the age issue, and she's never come back, right? Jenna Jameson left, tried to come back, failed, right? Ron's the only one that kind of like hops between the two and is completely okay. And so it's very chicken and egg, because is it, did the industry make Ron the person he is, or is just Ron how he's always been? Was Ron always this way before he got into porn, or were the expectations of the industry and the fans in the industry create who he is now? I think most people would have retired by now. You know, most people, you know, and again, I'm not saying any of this stuff to make fun of Ron. You know, once you start losing your hair and you start putting on some weight and you have hair growing in strange places and you become nicknamed the hedgehog instead of like a leading man nickname, I would have retired, right? Instead, he decided to like follow the William Shatner method, which is like, I'm just going to parody myself. And that's my new brand. But when you are a parody of yourself 24/7, you know, how much of that is actually malicious? But at the same time, there are these allegations of actual inappropriate behavior that's not just, oh, I just groped a girl's boob on a convention floor, I stuck my hand up somebody's skirt. These are actual allegations of, you know, not just impropriety, but actual crime. And, you know, at a certain, what do they say? Never meet your heroes, you know? And I think that this is going to be a huge never meet your heroes moment for Ron, where most of us kind of put him up on a pedestal because he's Ron. And, you know, award shows have had him host their shows for years. He's constantly invited to come and attend events because they know that if he's going to be there, then there's going to be a large group of mainstream people that attend.
He's a draw and he gets mainstream attention.
And he is not what anybody, like in the entire universe, nobody would pick Ron Jeremy out of a lineup and say he is a draw, especially these days, right? Just because of his physicality. And the fact that he's sleeping all the time. Like, he doesn't really do a lot of interactive stuff with people. So the only interaction becomes this, like, odd gropey thing. And it makes me really sad. You know, and I think that as an industry, those of us who've been in the industry for more than 10 years, more than 8 years, or people, you know what, maybe I just take that back. Maybe it's not a how long you've been in an industry thing. It's maybe a how old are you? What generation are you from? So if you are over 40, you see Ron in a very different way than you see him when you were a 20-year-old, you know, because we understand the legacy of the person that is Ron Jeremy. And it's unfortunate, is the only thing that I can like boil it down to. It's unfortunate that somebody who is technically an icon is also so creepy.
Okay, I'm going to restate the question. As accused, the worst of the accusations against Ron, does the industry, award shows and conventions, do they have an obligation to talent and to fans to shield them from any of these possible alleged behaviors?
I think that Ginger Lynn's accusation should really be looked into. I think that if Ron did indeed rape Ginger, then he should pay for it. There's also a part of me that thinks that Ron just wants an excuse to finally freaking retire. And if this is the thing that gets him to a point where he can finally be like, okay, I'm done, I can finally go away, I think he wouldn't be upset. That's just my personal opinion. Some people stick around longer than they should because they don't know anything else. Or this is the place they feel at home. But maybe this isn't his home anymore. You know, maybe it's time for him to move on.
Thank you for joining me again. This went a little longer than we thought, but I thought it was really good. Once again, Harvey Weinstein is a scumbag.
Absolutely.
Period. But the casting couch might not be a bad thing if everybody's on the same page. You know, just something to think about.
I think there should be a financial compensation for casting couches everywhere.
There we go. There we go. Thank you again, Kelly Jabari.
Thank you.
Check out rogerviews.com. And Kelly, do you want to promote any sites we can go to? Where can people follow you if they want to hear more of your opinions and less of mine?
I'm on Facebook mostly, which means, you know, I have to allow you to follow me or not.
Be nice to her.
I'm not on Twitter as much as I used to. I really just use it just for PR, just because the drama on Twitter is just astronomically ridiculous. My PR company is theprismgroup.com. I think that's about it right now, because I'm kind of in between. Like, I'm concentrating mostly on PR stuff and not really on performing.
Okay.
So, given the right circuit, if Angela White wants to do a scene with me, I will come back with guns a-blazing.
I will come out of my non-retirement for Angela White. Just saying. So, thank you again.
Yes, thank
you. We'll talk again soon.